I know I'm on the right thing. All right, now stop. Okay, now I'm not sure what's happening here because one thing, I'm not hearing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that. Yeah, this.
No, I'm not going to say that. I've got the DFM.
Okay, all right, now we're getting something, but I can't hear. Wait a minute.
Testing one.
Okay,
two,
you.
Three.
Yeah. Testing. No, I should be able to hear you very much. Okay, you're not coming through. Okay, that means I.
Well, there's one more plug that's not in there. Is that a plug?
I know, but I don't think that had to be in. Maybe I've got the wrong one. This one says Mike.
Yeah, well, Mike is what I've got here. So
yeah, okay, let's try that. The other plug.
You didn't need
oh,
that,
you're right. Right.
Testing one, two.
Everything's just fine, nine. Okay.
I have to keep it down a little lower, or you want it up
no,
a little higher?
No. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. Okay. Let me push. Okay. Now let's start. I guess the first thing I want you to tell me about when you got here and what made you come to Alaska and where were you born? Let's start at the beginning, that always helps.
I was born in Brooklyn, New York,
mm-hmm.
in the Norwegian section of town.
Okay, and you grew up there?
Yes, went through grade school, junior high, and high school.
And then you took off to go into the Great Wide World?
Into the Navy.
Into the Navy, okay.
7 years, 11 months, and 21 days later,
uh-huh.
I was back out again.
You were back out, and where were you then?
Well, we moved to Moscow, Idaho.
Oh, the
Moscow,
Idaho.
And we had a cow to milk, and I got training from my wife on how to milk a cow, and
mm-hmm.
finally got that great.
Yeah, but your wife wasn't with you at this time.
Yeah, well, she was then.
Well, she was. Mm-hmm. So
we married in Honolulu.
I see.
And it was territorial days.
Uh-huh.
And we came up here, it was territorial days.
I see. So you met your wife when you were in the Navy and married her.
Mm-hmm.
And then
didn't have to go anywhere on the honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. She already is one.
I married her for her Jeep. She had an old surplus Jeep with Chevrolet hubcaps on it.
And they, I guess they were in short supply.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not too many of those around.
Right. Okay, you were in Honolulu again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were separated again as you went.
Yeah, we went overseas and did nasty things in the tail end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And then atom bomb test out in Bikini Atoll.
Mm-hmm.
And finally back to my wife. And
she was in Moscow, Idaho.
No, she was in Honolulu.
Oh, so yeah, and what made you both set on Moscow, Idaho?
It was about 60 miles up the road where her ranch was she grew up on. She's the youngest of three daughters.
Uh-huh.
So that poor man just had a heck all the time. I was glad to see a feller that wanted a farm.
So you stayed there, and then how did you ever get out of there up to Alaska?
Well, we always intended to go. As a little kid, I was getting a bean catalog and you know, all these other things, and
mm-hmm.
wanted to get up to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it was tough at first, but it worked out.
And what was the tough? I mean, how did you find Alaska when you got it? What was Alaska like in those days?
Hmm. Very nice.
And
you used to go right downtown here over by the post office and drag your truck on the diagonal into the curb and walk away and leave the keys and the toolbox, everything was laid open. Nobody bothered it. Don't do that anymore, but it's one of those things.
So Fairbanks, what made you come to Fairbanks? Did you come to Fairbanks all the
way? Well, we started at the University of Idaho 2 years, and then we made the move up here because we always wanted to. Yeah. I went ahead on the 1st of June and got up here, and I said, sell a ranch. I think we've got a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
We did. That was down in Sprucewood Road.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy across the way that just finished an engineering degree, but his first job was Anchorage, and so he had a tile sign on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy across the way, I was helping him, he was the beaver man working for the Fish and Wildlife Service. And picked up a lot of pointers from him on trapping and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I never bothered with it. Mouse traps on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out to be a good thing. We got that cabin. It was a nice log cabin, but it just had a flat roof on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year we put a peak on it. That gave us a couple of bedrooms upstairs for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so that took care of that. I'd go off to school and I just had to walk up. My wife was working at the old St. Joseph Hospital here on the evening shift. So mm-hmm. I'd come home from school, she'd take off and go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much our routine. And then when we finally moved up on Miller Hill Road, we've been there ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you taught school here after you got out of university?
Uh-huh. I taught school at Lathrop, and then when Ryan opened up, I moved over there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and then I had a year or so that I was the AV director for the system, and then it kind of went bad. You know, they didn't need that job, so
mm-hmm.
they just eliminated it. So I went back in the classroom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you've seen and been here a lot. You were here. What did you think when they started talking about statehood?
Well, I liked it as a territory myself.
Why did you like it as a territory?
Well, there were fewer people, number one.
Mm-hmm. And it would have stayed that way with fewer people, I guess, yeah.
Well, and I got a job there as I was ready to graduate. I got a job at the old territorial police down there by Maryland on Illinois Street.
Uh-huh.
And that was good, except every once in a while everything would go, you know, you always took care of the guy that was in the car on the radio first. And
mm-hmm.
there'd be some trucker coming in with an overload permit or an overheight permit or something like that. He'd have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started with the breathalyzer test in those days, too.
Oh, my goodness. When was that? What was that process? 30 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, roughly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When did you get here?
June 1st.
In what year?
54.
So you were here 5 years while it was still a territory, so you have a good idea of what it was like. You know, a lot of people, when they live here, and you ask them why they live here, I suppose, the other than the fact that people say, well, of course, we like the outdoors, and we like the hunting and the fishing, you know, I mean, there's always that aspect of things. But mostly, you sooner or later get people saying, well, I really like the people.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that's what keeps us here.
Oh yeah. And you know, whether you can recall names of all the people that you've seen around town, you always know their faces. You see them mm-hmm. across the street and you wave at them.
What ways do you think people might be different to live here?
Well, they stick through the winters for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had 1 year of the 61-62 winter. 61 below. And here the kids were saying, where are the presents from Grandma and Aunt so-and-so and Mom and Grandma and all this other stuff? And so I put on all the war surplus stuff that I had in hand and I walked down to the college post office, which is across the street there now, that's Cook's Corner. And so I got the mail and stuffed that in my pack and walked across to the service station there and I said, I suppose you got a lot of down tires, just open the boiler room door.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened it up and here's tires stacked in there like big donuts.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they went out on the road again, they blew again, you know, but they figured it, they'd have to try it to get it home. So as it happened, the guy jumped in the wrecker and was heading out my way, and I says, are you going out mm-hmm. towards Sheep Creek Road? And he said, yeah. Can I get a ride with you? Sure, jump in. He dropped me off right at the front door.
Oh,
the only reason I got that ride was a neighbor of mine had a friend come out, he bought himself a new car for a Christmas present. He drove it out, left it idling in his front yard.
Who is that?
I don't know the guy with the car. He just knew Bill Jacobson down there.
Oh, Bill Jacobson. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Bunny too. And so he just dropped me off at the door, and the kids were jumping like on a trampoline. Dad's back, and he's got a sack full. You know. And it was true. The
uh-huh.
presents were there, so it was good.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Over the years, I imagine you've had quite a few experiences where you had to deal on a one-to-one basis with, or with sort of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I have to think very carefully, because
mm-hmm.
I would say the kindness, the generosity of people here.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We call examples of things like that have stuck in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd like to know how you philosophically feel about living in Alaska, too.
Well, we had always wanted to come. My wife was one of these that was going to travel all over as a nurse. And she She was on her way to Lebanon when I grabbed her. She had an appointment to go there. It sounded good. She'd read Khalil Gibran's book and things like that. And we still take it out every once in a while and read it.
You may get there yet.
Well, yeah, you never know. Why not?
But when you're thinking about having lived here philosophically and the people and how did you, and the times when people have either put themselves out for you or you put yourself out for other people, can you think of anything specific over the years that has developed in your mind?
No, not too much of that, but probably the one thing was that there were so many kids living on that Sprucewood Road area there, and my wife being a nurse down at the old St. Joseph's Hospital, when she was on call, even when she was off duty, that kind of thing. Yeah, there was an old timer up there that had a chunk of walrus ivory, and he cut a slab off, and he said, "You know, if you cut a little hole up here and then polish it down, it would make a nice watch fob for your house." And we got a cheap Westclock watch, and I still use it.
That's
nice. It's a nice leather fob and goes right in the watch pocket. And that was the Christmas present, you see. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the money. Yeah. And the strange thing was that we had an old Chevy pickup truck, and it, for some reason or other, was the only thing that would run down there. Nobody else could get there started. And if there was a sick kid down the road, they'd come up and knock on the door any time of the day or night, and they'd say, "We got to get her into the doctor of the hospital." Well, obviously it's the hospital because there's always just somebody on duty, and it was the old St. Joseph's. Mm-hmm. In some ways it was a better hospital. Now it's just an empty shell. I sure hope they don't take it down. It should be used for something.
I think so too. It probably has a lot of memories for a lot of people.
Oh yeah, so many people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back before even Samson Hardware, which is...
That's pretty long, right?
Yeah.
But there weren't very many people here when you were a kid.
No, not that many.
What was the size of the town?
The town wasn't too much further than what you can see here. You know, the surrounding hills were still just green. Very few people living up on the hills out here. Most of them were in the floodplain, which was good and bad. You know, you could go fishing, and you could go boating and things like that. And lots of people do. Now they started going down, salt and places like that. And, especially when the salmon are in.
Oh, yeah. Were you very interested in hunting and fishing, or that wasn't one of your things?
Well, I was interested in it, but I was just originally a wildlife graduate, but there just weren't any jobs available at that time. Mm-hmm. In the territorial system, it was just the one school, Lathrop, and the downtown one right over here. I don't know.
Sometimes people say that there's a philosophical question I'd like to sort of throw at you, is that does the land influence the people, or do the people influence the land? How would you feel?
Well, if it's an equal balance, you're both better for it. But if it isn't, you leave the country.
Yeah.
And we've left several times just to take a year off and go travel and do things like that. And we were better for that, you see. And even after we both retired from the school system, I guess you recall that Norma was the second special ed teacher here in town.
Oh, yeah. God.
She finished her 20 years at the one right across from she's down here.
Yeah, Barnett.
Barnett.
Uh-huh.
For Barnett's cash. The guy that came on the river and came up and started right here with the NC, the old NC. And I hope they keep that going.
I think so.
We used to go in there to buy the groceries and things like that, and they had a plain thing with a carbon copy in it, and they hand wrote every item at the price.
Added
it up, no cash register or anything like that. They did it all
added
right
it
there.
All up. Oh,
and
God.
People would walk out, and every once in a while there would be one little error, and they'd come back and they'd say, No. That guy only got two of these, not, okay, and they just changed it. I put a sled on layaway because our kids were saying, "Gee, we had a sled down in Idaho. We don't have a sled here." Well, we didn't have much snow down in Idaho either, but here we had plenty of it. Our hill happened to have a good run.
Mm-hmm.
And then we used to go clear down, and we tried to put ashes and rocks down at the bottom of the hill. Otherwise, we'd shoot straight across and go on the railroad track.
Uh-huh.
It's a straight shot, and you're in a dip, and then you're up on the railroad track if you make it that far. And some of the people in different schools around here had built up, kind of a bobsled and a hand brake, but it wasn't enough to stop you. steep hill once you get going with, say, four or five big people on it. Mm-hmm. It's hard to stop. A lot of people just bailed out. They didn't want to stay on it.
Yeah, I would do that. Either.
Otherwise, you'd be scattered across that road down there.
Yeah.
Sheep Creek.
That's quite a hill. I mean, it looks sort of not such a steep grade, but when you're on it in a sled, I imagine it becomes very hard.
Well, go on a bicycle in the summertime. You know,
yeah, just, same thing.
You don't even have to pedal. You just get on it and it picks up speed faster and faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the spokes.
How do you feel about raising your kids here as compared to in Idaho? I mean, because Idaho must have been pretty well, not very settled then in those days either.
Oh, Moscow, Idaho was a very progressive town. In fact, this is where the John Deere bought the patent from these guys. They're the ones that came out with that self-propelled combine and all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
And they could have retired, but they started out originally. Their grandparents were blacksmiths and things like that, and they became iron benders, in other words, repairing the threshing rigs and all this other stuff.
But I was wondering what the contrast were between, say, Alaska and Idaho at that time.
Didn't get as cold in Idaho for one thing, but,
but it
did in some parts of Idaho.
But you decide here, why did you decide that it was better in Fairbanks to live in Idaho?
When I was a kid, I went to the libraries in junior high and high school both, and read everything I could get on Alaska magazine.
There's romanticism about Alaska.
Yeah, but, you know, it at that time, I think it was a better magazine than it ever is now.
Uh-huh.
And then they came out with this thing that had a little bit of Alaska, but a lot of it was all over the place, and I canceled my prescription? No. I kind of told them why. I got a nice letter back. Said, "Well, we're thinking of going back to the Alaska only one, and then the national
they
one."
They did that, didn't
and they?
They
did. Well, it wasn't just me. I think there was a lot of people that didn't like the change, and they saw it. You know, they saw the sail in the wind, and so they said, "We better get on that."
Uh-huh.
And so they came back to having the local one.
So when you got here, what made you think that Fairbanks would say, "Gosh, we'd better stay here and sell the farm," right?
Well, you know, we didn't have that much of a farm. I mean, we just a cow and a couple of kittens running around. We had a beef calf there and things like that. But we had good neighbors all around. The guy right up the hill used to come around and plow our field up, mules and horses, and him walking behind with the reins and walk behind it in the furrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you give them signals, you know.
When you were in university, did you always want to be a teacher? Was that the thing?
I think it was always in my background. I always enjoyed the teachers I had up until the time I didn't have to quite finish my last semester. I was in the last semester of high school back in New York, and I was going to go into the Navy, so they said, "Okay, you've graduated because you signed up," and that was a 7 years, 11 months, and 21 days. Call it 8 years. And just the 1st of June was 30 years that I was up here 30 years on the 1st of June this year.
Mm. When you say you fit with them and they fit with us, I mean, what do you mean when you say that? I mean, how do you feel you fit in and they fit in?
I think maybe just being able to look at a person and knowing that they're all right, as far as you're concerned, and they feel the same about you. And whether they remember your name because they've seen you 100 times or not, it doesn't matter. They always wave and say howdy, that kind of thing.
And a feeling, I think that sense, a feeling of security of peaceful in, as you said, being with one of your own. And I guess that's that you're saying you're somebody who likes to be able to wave to their neighbors and be there to help out and be, you know, and you feel comfortable because that's the kind of people you're around.
And it's pretty much the way I was raised. I mean, here I was a kid raised in Brooklyn. My wife was a sweet rancher's daughter in South Spokane, Washington, and we met in Honolulu.
And you have the same values and same ideas, right?
I think so. Otherwise we wouldn't have been together all
those
years.
Right. Do you think people have come here basically because of those values?
Or at least they're hoping for it. And they know they can always cut and run if they don't.
Do you think people are looking for good solid values or place to live? Or do you think that matters to a lot of people?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Now, there's a lot of frivolous things going on that probably shouldn't be, but it's their place to do it. And if it drives them out of the country, we're better off.
Yeah.
If they're not right.
That's right. I feel the same way. But I'm very always very interested in why the sort of people that I mean I'm attracted to the same people you are, you know. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of mutual friends. The thing is, so I'm interested in how you perceive this, and I ask everybody these questions because I want to know what it is. I mean, I guess I'm sort of, these are self-reflective questions, because when you ask people how they feel about a place that they're living and the people that are living there, when they themselves are living there, you're really asking them how mm-hmm. do you feel about yourself. You may put that on the floor. I mean, is your ashes, because
I always wait for the thing to get cool.
Oh, I
and
see.
I take that off.
Okay.
And then I can't start another fire.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. When you found when you were working here, when you were working with the children?
Pardon?
When you found you were teaching, when you were teaching,
mm-hmm.
did you find, well, you hadn't taught anywhere else, though, had you?
No, well, of course, I finished here the last 2 years at the university,
yeah,
and then I was,
teaching.
I was not sure whether there was going to be a job, and so I was, you know.
Why, was it that in territorial days, or
yeah.
just were many days?
We had, fishing game had a predator agent and a couple of patrolmen, and that was about it.
Wow.
And U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And eventually the state took it over.
And then there was the school, only one school then, or what?
Yeah,
for you to teach in.
At that time, yeah, because Ryan hadn't quite opened up. And when uh-huh. I graduated, I was lucky enough to get a job at Blacher.
Uh-huh.
And I was there until it was just bulging at the seams. There were so many children coming
mm-hmm.
from the local people and other people coming up, you know, pipeliners and summer workers and all this
yeah.
other stuff. And some of them liked it so much they didn't want to go back down.
Mm-hmm.
Sold the place down there and got a place up here.
Well, statehood made a lot of difference to people getting more jobs.
Oh, yeah, because the territorial days, there just wasn't that much in the way of construction. Their idea of construction was to add new gravel where the stuff had washed away across the road or something like that,
uh-huh.
10 miles out of town.
It's funny, everybody mentions the roads. Isn't that the funniest thing?
Mm-hmm.
You ask them about what they think back about statehood, they say, well, I remember this or that about the roads. So the roads must have been pretty awful. Statehood must have been,
well,
that federal money must have made a real difference.
There weren't too many people killing themselves on those roads either, because they weren't trying to make time. They planned ahead. You see, took enough food with them, took gear for wintertime driving.
Just to drive downtown, you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because many times the plows couldn't get out early enough,
uh-huh.
and a lot of people got partway to town, and then they had to start walking. But if you're smart, you have an old sea bag or something in the back with good clothing, because the car can always break down.
Oh, yeah. Something
like a
I
bad spark plug.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the wintertime, I've got a big old Navy sea bag, and it goes in the back of the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Got everything from mucklucks to a little can of heat,
and
you take the lid off. And
yeah.
Sterno.
That's right. Sterno. I remember the other day because I was trying to buy some and I couldn't remember what the name of it was.
Mm-hmm.
Canned heat, I finally
yeah.
got down and got it. I was thinking, and so the statehood really brought a lot of jobs. But it brought more people. Like,
of course, there were more people that came up thinking they were going to get good work at high wages, and there just wasn't that many jobs. The locals
mm-hmm.
were getting a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
which is fair.
Which is fair, yeah.
As long as they're good workers.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, this was pre-pipeline, too. I mean, we got here pre-pipeline, so, uneven, and it was much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of stayed a small little community with the same sort of people. And it probably would have stayed that way.
And it couldn't have been all bad, because now the hills are just covered with beautiful homes.
Uh-huh.
But the hills look better, just green to me, or
uh-huh. uh-huh.
And they've had the punching roads out there, that back road out Farmer's Loop. Going back out through there and
right.
ends up at the university now.
Yeah.
And I got to ride on the old Grimes bus barn down there and the torpedo bag buses. You know, they came through.
Oh, yeah.
And every once in a while the thing would give out when they got almost up to the corner and made that sharp right turn.
Uh-huh.
Judge Pinnell's house used to be right on that lawn up there outside the Allison building.
Oh, yeah.
Judge
uh-huh.
Pinnell's house is right there.
Was it?
A lot of people don't know it. I can show you the footings.
Yeah, because
floor.
I didn't know that was there.
Right
yeah.
in the grass, there's the footings for it.
Uh-huh.
Some of them have been dug out when they put the lawn in, but this one surfaced the other day. And they took his building and put it over on top of another building back behind the firehouse.
Yes.
And that became the home ec department and things like that. But they needed two stories. They had
mm-hmm.
a daycare center at the bottom, which
mm-hmm.
was a concrete building, and up above was his house. And it's still there.
Can you still look?
It's been repainted and re-windowed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those house and building things, they have just wooden windows and they have a couple of holes filled, which I think came off the base, you know, surplus here.
Mm-hmm.
And you just lift that back and that would give you a little bit of air, fresh air.
Well, when did the Army come in? They must have come in after statehood then, actually.
I think there was some Army here before, but I think they were kind of tied together with Army and Road Commission, you know.
Yeah, because it was punching the roads through during the war. That's right, there would have been some here.
And that, was, that was one of those, we got to get it done. Of course, the Russians are coming.
At least when they come, people can say, well, we've been expecting you for 40 years.
They paid the
$40,000. If they ever come and visit. Okay, things I think about, I guess, when I think of this is, when you were raising your children here, did you feel you were raising them in the very best place with the very best external values that you could give? Or?
I think my wife and I both felt that way, that the grandparents who lived down there in southern Washington. They weren't too sure, but you know, one year we finally figured, well, they're not going to come down and see us anymore. We better go up there and maybe we'll get some fishing in. And he came up, and that was when I was working evening shift at the Territorial Police.
Uh-huh.
And I came home that one night, and the aurora was just going crazy.
Oh.
By the railroad tracks. I eased the car in, and the truck in, and shot it off, and went in, and I shook him on the shoulder. And said, Grandpa, you want to see some northern lights? Oh, yes, please. And he pulled that cloak over, and here he is in his long johns, no slippers or anything, and he stood on the front porch, and he says, oh, I wouldn't have missed that for the world.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure glad you woke me up for that. And my wife got up and she said, what's going on out there? I said, well, Grandpa wanted to see the northern lights and he just saw them. He would have been a good pioneer too. A good farmer. Soil conservation guys would come around and say, you know, we've got a new type of wheat we want to test out. We've got a little patch over there. And he said, oh, there's about 20, 24 acres over there. Here, put it in there. And then you'd go downtown to get some equipment or something there, and the guys would say, Bayard, you're just throwing good money after bad. You're wasting your time. We know what the good wheat is. He says, we'll see when the wheat checks come in. Sure enough, when they found out what he got for his wheat, and the yield and everything else, and how clean it was,
mm-hmm.
I said, say, how was it you, how deep did you drill that, and what kind of wheat was that?
Mm-hmm.
He'd share it with them. Well,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good farmer.
Sounds like a good lasting as well. I think a lot of people did that sort of thing up here. That's how we all survived.
That's right. Clyde Sherman and all those people.
Mm-hmm.